Welcome to the AANEM podcast series, a monthly discourse on recent publications in neuromuscular and electrodiagnostic literature, featuring interviews with the authors and other experts, brought to you by the American Association of Neuromuscular and Electrodiagnostic Medicine. The AANEM welcomes your comments, suggestions, and questions. Email them to aanem@aanem.org.
Hello, AANEM podcast listener. My name is Chilvana Patel. I am an associate professor in Department of Neurology at University of Texas Medical Branch, Galveston. It is my pleasure to be interviewing Dr. Tan, professor and vice chair of Faculty Affairs, Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, and electrodiagnostic lab director at Smith Clinic for Harris Health System at Baylor College of Medicine, Houston, Texas, about her recently published AANEM monograph in February 2022 on musculoskeletal mimics of cervical radiculopathy. Dr. Tan, welcome to AANEM podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having here. Being electrodiagnostic consultants, we have been frequently asked to evaluate patients with cervical radicular symptoms. As literature suggests, about 42% of patients with cervical radiculopathy have musculoskeletal disorders also. And to further complicate the situation, cervical radiculopathy and musculoskeletal disorders can exacerbate each other's symptoms. It becomes prime importance for us to obtain accurate diagnosis and provide up-to-date treatment over patients. Today, we will discuss about approach to musculoskeletal mimics of cervical radiculopathy. Before we go in details, Dr. Tan, what will be your systemic approach to categorize musculoskeletal mimickers?
I personally focus on the referring question and body region that has the symptoms. These are listed in the table one on the manuscript. At the same time, I'm cognizant of organ systems and the entire body, for example, in people with diabetes. One kind of has to master the ability to both zoom into the area affected and zoom out at the same time and look at the whole body. So for me, the evaluation starts as soon as we bring the patient from the waiting area to the exam room. I looked at whether they're swinging their arms symmetrically during gait, whether they're wearing splints, guarding, range of motion, and posture. At that point, I do a relevant history and physical. When I was a new attending, I would just answer the EMG referral question and move on. But then I found that patients would come back with the same question. So to really help my patients and the referring primary care physician, I really need to identify the musculoskeletal problem and get them to the right place.
Thank you, Dr. Tan. It's very important. We were always taught history and physical is the most important part for the patient's correct diagnosis, and electrodiagnostic studies are extension of it. So thank you to brought that us back to our knowledge. Let me move forward. Moving towards the different regions, particularly many of the time, head and neck region musculoskeletal disorders mimic cervical radiculopathies. How the history and physical exam help us to differentiate it from cervical radiculopathy?
So there are several musculoskeletal disorders that mimic cervical radiculopathy, including headache, neck pain, TMJ, and facet disorders. So in general, if there's tenderness to palpation of the muscles, such as temporal, mandibular, and neck muscles, that supports a musculoskeletal component. I look also at the range of motion of the head and neck, lateral, forward bending, and turning. This is important as well. There's, you know, a joke from the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which the mother says the father's the head of the family, but she controls the neck, which controls the head. And that's true, because when there's a disorder in the neck, then it really gives rise to a lot of these symptoms. So headache, migraine, dental guard, history of grinding the teeth, night guards, ringing in just one ear, difficulty opening their jaw, a lot of caffeine intake are clues. I use imaging with X-ray to look for degenerative changes in the TMJ and facet joint. And also, you can use diagnostic blocks to help confirm the diagnosis, such as medial branch blocks.
Thank you. Moving forward, let's talk about the shoulder region. Shoulder pathologies, particularly rotator cuff disorders, present with abduction weakness and mimic C5-C6 radiculopathy. How should we differentiate them?
So the strategy is to find where the two overlapping circles have no overlap. So rotator cuff tend to have painful passive range of motion, symptoms worse at night, and symptoms with overhead. You can use Neer and Hawkins to diagnose that, whereas a C5-6 radiculopathy will show muscle weakness in the non-rotator cuff muscles, such as biceps. Shoulder impingement is where the supraspinatus gets trapped in the tight, narrow subacromial space, and this can be ischemic. So it's called the critical zone because it's both narrow and watershed, and that puts it at risk for injury. Bicep tendonitis, you can, you know, check with Jurgensen's test, and paralabral cysts are fluid-filled bubbles that arise from tears, and they can be visualized and drained.
Thank you. Moving forward to the next region is elbow and forearm. Musculoskeletal disorders of elbow and forearm region mimics C6-C8 radiculopathy. Could you please tell us about medial epicondylitis, lateral epicondylitis, or bicipital tendon tear or rupture? How do they present, and how can we separate or differentiate from cervical radiculopathy?
So medial epicondylitis, or golfer's elbow, causes pain over the medial epicondyle and also hurts with resisted wrist and finger flexion. The lateral is tennis elbow and has pain over the lateral epicondyle and hurts with resisted wrist and finger extension. So again, we're trying to find areas where they don't have identical symptoms. For C7 radiculopathy, the triceps is affected. For C8, the hand muscles, and that would be spared in both of these golfer's elbow and tennis elbow. And that's how we kind of differentiate that. Bicipital tendon is a complete tear, and then it can retract and make so-called Popeye sign, that requiring a surgical reattachment. We recently saw somebody with that when they were stabbed. I've also seen it tear off in severe spasticity. So ultrasound will identify that. On needle, there is decreased voluntary recruitment in the biceps, but no spontaneous activity. If it's a new tear, you can actually move the muscle back into place and flatten it out. But once you let go, the Popeye deformity will reform right before your eyes.
Thank you. There are also other musculoskeletal disorders of elbow and forearm, particularly forearm compartment syndrome. And sometimes we see muscle hypertrophy in athletes can also present with pain and weakness. And I think it will be very important to figure it out, like it is just the forearm pathology rather than the neck radicular symptoms, cervical radiculopathy. Could you please go over it?
Yeah, this is a very interesting phenomenon. It's often seen in young muscular athletes, so you're thinking there's nothing wrong with them. It can be differentiated from cervical radiculopathy by presence of forearm swelling, difficulty with passive range of motion, a diminished pulse. You can look for the so-called Griffith's 5 P's, which are pain, pallor, paresthesias, paralysis, and decreased pulse. You know, it's interesting. We saw several of these in the construction workers after Hurricane Harvey here in Houston. They were working nonstop, and they were very strong, and they had this weakness in their forearm. The nerve conductions came out pretty well.
Similarly, going forward, wrist and hand region, particularly the Decuerian tenosynovitis and intersection syndrome, also resemble C6-C8 radiculopathy. What should be our approach here?
Right. Well, the Quer veins is involving the first dorsal compartment of the wrist, the APL and the EPB. The mnemonic, a lot of people know, is all peanut lovers eat peanut butter. So you'll have a positive Finkelstein test when you put those tendons on stretch. To contrast it from a C8 radiculopathy, only this region around the thumb shows pain-limited weakness, and the rest of the hand is strong. Intersection syndrome is where the first compartment intersects with the tendons of the second, the ECRBL. And it's more proximal and a bit more medial to the Quer veins. You can feel some crepitus and fullness where they intersect. You can see it on ultrasound. And it hurts more in pronation. It feels better with supination. Of course, if you know how to do it, you can diagnostically and therapeutically treat it with injection. And that way, you know for sure that's what's going on.
So now moving forward from regions and moving towards more like a more organ system, like, you know, system, one of the major mimicker and the most difficult musculoskeletal disorder comes across as myofascial pain syndrome. How can we differentiate myofascial pain syndrome? Patients do present with the pain, heaviness around in the same area of the neck and upper shoulder region. So could you please tell us about the pathology, clinical features, and evaluation of patients with a myofascial pain?
Yeah, no, most members of the American Pain Society believe that myofascial pain syndrome is a distinct entity. There is an imbalance and overuse of these muscles, leading to a lack of ADP, sustained muscle contraction, and inability to pump the calcium back up into the sarcoplasmic reticulum. This leads to painful, tender bands and trigger points with radiating referral patterns. And these patterns don't match up with the cervical radicular dermatomal patterns. So they're also very tender when you push on them, and there's a, quote, jump sign with palpation and immediate relief with injection. Imaging is now possible in research settings of trigger points. It was very hard. It took a long time for people to find this. It combines both elastogram and high-frequency ultrasound. I remember when I was a fellow, we were trying to image it as well. We called it a squishogram. We got funding from an agricultural university grading the cost of different types of steaks, and the softer the squishing, then they would charge more on the squishogram, and if it was kind of tough and hard to compress, then they would charge less. So that's kind of a funny correlation, but that's what, you know, you can actually feel on these people.
Going forward, many vascular and autonomic disorders, such as thoracic outlet syndrome or a complex regional pain syndrome, also confuses with cervical radiculopathy. How can we differentiate them, and what would be helpful in forms of laboratory testing and imaging studies here?
Vascular thoracic outlet can present with distal ischemia, a kind of Raynaud's phenomenon where the arm turns white or blue. It can have claudication where it hurts more with exercise and overhead activities. You know, there's several tests, Adson's test where the pulse drops when you look toward the affected arm. There's Ruse, which looks like you're waving high and you're clenching your fist, and it was actually blanch. We actually saw one just the other day, and with pumping their fist, they hand turn white. You can order CT MR angiogram. Again, we're looking at young athletes. And CRPS, or complex regional pain syndrome, is diagnosed with the Budapest criteria that came out relatively recently. And it requires that you have three of these four. One is sensory loss, motor loss or trophic changes, but in addition, some vasomotor changes and or pseudomotor and edema, allodynia, limb color changes, all don't happen that much in cervical radiculopathy.
With COVID-19 pandemics, we have started using more digital devices, and that results being us and patient less active. We have reduced range of motion because of more dependence on these digital devices. Could you please tell us how this biomechanical factors and change in range of motion can contribute or imitate cervical radiculopathy?
Yes, studies have shown that the forward head posture increases the weight on the supporting structures in your neck from the original weight of the head, about 10 pounds, to now 30 pounds. And anyone who's walked around with, say, 30 pounds realizes it's pretty heavy for a prolonged amount of time. And this leads to increased neck pain. So they've found this happens, and we're not really aware of it when we're typing on computers, smartphones, and they both have postural problems, and there's now several studies that have documented that. Typing with your arms forward on the keyboard leads to rounded shoulders that decrease that subacromial space we talked about before and leads to the impingement and rotator cuff tears. In fact, you could say we have seen a pandemic of decreased range of motion, not just in the arms, but also in the legs, leading to increased musculoskeletal symptoms during the COVID lockdowns. And what we noticed that decreased range of motion in the legs can radiate upward and affect the arms. So if you can't, say, touch your toes anymore, and you round your back some more because you can't touch your toes, that just all magnifies as you go up the body. And a small problem, let's say a tiny pebble in your shoe, ends up being magnified by the time it gets up to the neck.
And is there an increased range of mobility sometime in patients with like Ehlers-Danlos or other connective tissue disorder can also contribute or mimic cervical radiculopathy?
Yes, that's also a great question. Decreased range of motion is a problem, and increased range of motion can also be a problem. If you have hypermobility and looseness in your joints, it's often a referral to us to look for cervical radiculopathy. Because you have a different alignment because of the range of motion, it may be pulling down on your shoulder and other structures, causing a kind of subluxation, which over time has problems if the shoulder joint is not held completely in the shoulder joint, and that can lead to a cascade of pain symptoms.
Thank you. Can you also discuss about this vicious cycle when musculoskeletal disorder lead to cervical radiculopathy, as well as cervical radiculopathy can lead to musculoskeletal disorders?
So musculoskeletal disorders can cause wear and tear and arthritis and lead to a degenerative cascade. It can also lead to some contractures if you have less range of motion with these tightened taut bands that are limiting your ability to move. I compare that to tight clothing in that you're no longer able to move freely. So these in turn upset the biomechanical balance, and this degeneration can cause a cervical radicular nerve impingement over time. And we've all seen x-rays and MRIs in which, you know, middle-aged or older people have degenerative problems, central or foraminal stenosis, and eventually it can encroach on the nerve roots and cause radicular symptoms. On the flip side, then you have cervical radiculopathies, which we know already when the nerve is pinched can cause numbness and weakness. So when those muscles are removed, then you have compensatory muscles that have to kick in and help. So those compensatory muscles then get overused, and that leads back to this musculoskeletal disorder Again, more trigger points, more tender bands. And unfortunately, when those two halves are linked together, this causes a vicious cycle that feeds into itself, and each one worsens the other component. A lot of people will come and have decrease in function. It disrupts their sleep, and eventually it can even lead to the inability to go to work. So it's very important that we address it and halt the cycle.
Thank you so much for explaining this. And lastly, if we can briefly discuss overall management of musculoskeletal disorders.
So the monograph is focused mainly on the differential, and we wanted to start with that. But the next step would be to make recommendations or referrals for management. Some of the basic things we do is identify and treat the root cause of the musculoskeletal disorder to help break the cycle. This could include stretching, restoring the range of motion before we strengthen. And the old adage from sports medicine is that you need to restore at least about 80% of your range of motion before you can start strengthening those muscles. It is just so exciting right now in pain medicines. There's a lot of procedures. We started with things like basic things decades ago, like trigger point injection, myofascial release from therapists and massage therapists. But now we have specialists in interventional pain, rheumatology, and physiatry that can start looking at non-operative options to knock out branches, to restore the disc height, and really keep this cascade from perpetuating. If we can do that and help with their pain management, break the cycle of lack of sleep leading to pain, leading to dysfunction, then we can hopefully get them back on board and get them back to being able to work and off disability.
That's so important for all our patients to bring back to the quality of life. Thank you so much. Thank you again. We appreciate your time and participation to help us learn. Thank you.